Welcome into the Thunder basketball universe. We are recording this podcast on Friday, May 10th. That means we are two games deep in this best of seven series between the Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks. The series currently split 1-1, and a lot has happened here in Paycom Center over these first two games. So, Nick, what do you say? We have a little game of made you look, because I feel like there's been a lot of things that have made us look.
Yeah, and that's what the first two games of a series really do. They kind of open your eyes to the possibility and sort of the wonder that goes through everybody of like, okay, is this something that's going to be a consistent theme through the series, or is this a one-off event? So many times when you get deeper into a series, game three, game four, game five, something happens and you can pinpoint, all right, that feels like an anomaly compared to what we've seen up to this point. But game one, game two, you're still getting a feel for everything. And so we've got a couple things that made us look.
All right, so I'll let you go first. What caught your eye over these first couple of games?
Well, what was really fascinating to me was the fact that the Thunder had a week to prepare for the series. And coming in right away, pretty quickly, they went to a double big lineup against the Dallas Mavericks. It's something that Mark Daigneault has played with throughout the course of the season, hasn't invested in a massive amount of time or energy into putting it out there on the floor. But he had these sequences with Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams, Jay Will, on the floor together. And what's fascinating about that lineup, particularly defensively, is that it allows Chet to be the roamer on the weak side as the help man and have Jay Will guarding the screener in pick and rolls. And we know that Dallas loves to run that high screen and roll with either Luka Doncic or Kyrie Irving and their kind of tandem bigs of Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively. So having Jay Will kind of as that point of attack guy and Chet able to loom large on the back line and block shots was really able to help the Thunder spur some defense to offense action.
This also goes with a larger theme for the Thunder and something that you pointed out, where in this postseason, we've seen the Thunder throw out a lot of different looks, especially on the defensive end. You talked about the double big lineup. Also in game two, we saw a super small lineup with J-Dub essentially as the big man out there on the floor. We've also seen the Thunder go to a kind of a 1-2-2 or a 3-2 zone sort of situation. And we've also seen the Thunder blitz Luka as soon as he crosses half court.
Yeah.
The key with the Dallas Mavericks is you can't throw them the same look over and over and over again. That's how guys like Luka, guys like Kyrie get really comfortable. They find a rhythm, they find a groove. And so for OKC, it's all about just throwing different looks, throwing different schemes and different tactics their way. So they never really get into a rhythm throughout the game. And the Thunder, that's something that isn't just showing up in postseason. That's something that we've seen really all regular season as well. Just throwing a lot of different, you know, schemes, lineups, rotations. We've seen a mix of rotations throughout games one and game two. But all of that is an advantage to the Thunder to keep Dallas a little bit on their heels.
Yeah, and these lineups aren't just pertinent necessarily on the defensive end, but can give you juice offensively too. So the lineup that you referenced with J-Dub at the five, well, that means you're really spread. And that means that you've very likely got 5 3-point shooters on the floor at the same time. That puts so much pressure on a defense. Conversely, the double big lineup, we saw in game one, the Thunder really take advantage of the offensive glass. Out-rebounded Dallas significantly on that end, had 16 offensive rebounds. So that physicality at the rim was definitely there. And in addition, you have both of those bigs who are very smart, heady passers and guys that can knock down the three ball. And both of them hit threes in both games of this series so far.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see kind of the chess match between the coaching staffs to see kind of how they respond to each other's schemes and tactics out there on the floor. And I imagine game three is going to be a lot more of those schemes. All right, I have a couple of made you looks.
Okay.
All right, the first one is about the fans. And as I mentioned, my first postseason with the Thunder in person. And so what I've been fascinating to see is the different layouts of the shirts.
Oh, yeah.
So in the first round, it was always a whiteout. Like both games were just white t-shirts and it was just a sea of white in the arena. It was really cool. Awesome shirts. But then we get to game one of the Western Conference semifinals and it's a checkerboard. Yeah. And I thought that looked so cool.
It looks really awesome. Especially on TV too.
Yeah.
You know, like It's a good look.
Yeah, and then we had the all blue, kind of a sea of blue in game two. I thought that was really cool. But I have to say, I'm feeling like the checkerboard might be my favorite one so far.
It's so hard to pick because they – and it almost feels like each one brings a little bit of a different energy, kinda. Which is so silly to say about T-shirts.
Yeah.
But it's great. And, of course, I think the Thunder crowd once again is gaining that national notoriety of this just being a different environment. Yeah. I mean, game one – The 30 minutes before tip-off, there was not a single open seat.
And everyone was standing
everyone
up.
Everyone was standing. Everyone clapping in unison for basically 30 minutes straight.
Yeah.
So it's just such an amazing scene. You know, we get done with our pregame media responsibilities, grab a quick bite to eat, and by the time you walk out, it's just this chorus of sound and activity and energy, and it's like, whoa, what am I stepping into? And I'm sure that's how both teams felt too.
I love how the players have their routines and the fans have also kind of picked up their own routines as well, especially during the starting lineups, because when the Dallas starting lineup is getting announced, it's just chants of OKC during the entire announcement of the starting lineup for the Dallas Mavericks. So you can't hear any of the names being called at all. And then by the time the Thunder's lineups are being announced, every single guy has like their own sort of like chant from the crowd, essentially. And it makes me smile. It makes me so happy that the crowd has caught on and is like really showing out during the postseason. The other thing that made me look, this is actually a basketball related one. This is basketball related.
We're equal opportunity here. I mean,
this
anything
is why it's
you want to go
under basketball universe.
Anything that you want to get to, we can get to.
The second thing that made me look is just Lou Dort.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of him. Great
defender. Yeah, I'm aware of his work.
Excellent defender. In game one, he had a sequence that set the house on fire, like essentially. Yeah. He knocked down a three-pointer on one end. The very next possession, Luka brings the ball across half court. Lou picks his pocket, swipes the ball away. But then he dives on the ball, like we've seen Lou do several times. He did that same thing in the New Orleans series where he just kind of like head first dove on the ball.
Leapt over the pile like it was a football play. Yeah,
exactly. Same sort of energy from Lou. Dove on the loose ball, gets the ball out to, I believe, Shea, who kicks it ahead to J-Dub. Mm-hmm. J-Dub dunks it in transition. 18,000 fans start barking. And I love that moment so much because it's so indicative of A, Lou's impact out there on the floor. We think of him as a defender. We think of him as, you know, this lockdown sort of menace on that end of the floor. But at the end of the day, the thing that I think makes him so dangerous is he's just a competitive monster.
Yeah.
Coach Dagnall calls him a punching bag because there's two types of toughness, he says. There's throwing punches and there's taking punches.
Yeah.
And when you're guarding Luka Doncic for 40 minutes throughout a night, when you're guarding Brandon Ingram for four straight games, you're going to take some punches.
Yeah.
You're going to taste your own blood a little bit. And Lou never stops coming. He never stops giving a full out effort, even if Luka hits a three right in his face or crosses him up or he loses him on a coverage. Lou is going to keep coming every single possession.
That play and that sequence was so amazing because it really is Thunder basketball encapsulated. And I've been here for 13 out of the 16 seasons that the team has been in OKC. It's a lot of different sort of iterations of the team. Personnel has been different across that time. They've had varying degrees of success over the course of that time. But if I think of a sequence that resonates with the Thunder fan base, that where the Thunder crowd is at its peak and where the Thunder team is kind of at its peak and its core identity, it's that exact play. It's a hustle scrap defensive play that turns immediately into a quick strike, fast break, dunk or out in the open floor finish that involves like some passing and teamwork. I mean, you go back to the kind of the first mountain climb of this team and you saw the Durant, Harden, Westbrook teams making those types of plays. You saw, you know, the Westbrook, Paul George teams making those plays. You saw the team that went to the bubble make those types of plays, that Lou was a part of those teams too, you know?
Right.
So each iteration, those kind of plays are really defining of what this organization, what this team wants to be about.
And to your point about the fans, I love that the Thunder fan base is not just kind of like, they're not only screaming for a touchdown, right? It's they recognize and appreciate those hustle, gritty effort plays as much as they appreciate. I think one of the loudest roars I heard was for like a charge that Jay Will took. Like,
I was going to say a shot clock violation.
A shot clock violation. Yeah, yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. Those sort of plays are just as like energy inducing yeah. in the building as a made three or a dunk by a J-Dub, you know?
Yeah, and it's so cool to witness and just to recognize that like NBA basketball was not here, you know, 15, 16 years ago.
Yeah.
And yet this city is totally in tune with all of the little microcosms of the game and all of the different like idiosyncrasies of even how these individual players play. Some of these guys in their first or second year in the mm-hmm. league. And, you know, the fans are barking about not just certain players, but about when certain players make certain types of plays.
Right.
There's a recognition of like, some of the core identity of even these individual players and what they're out there to do. I think a lot of that is established at the beginning of the season, even of like kind of an idea of who these guys are, how they want to attack, what they want to do. And we're able to sort of track that over time. And I think it's been cool that the fans have really absorbed
yeah.
the identities of these players and how, as Shea said the other day, you know, everyone has a role and their role is extremely important to the team, even if those roles look different.
Yeah.
And I think the fans are even understanding and embracing exactly what those roles are for each guy.
It's really beautiful to watch in yeah. person. Like I don't think I stopped smiling at any point before the buzzer sounded pregame for that game, just because the Thunder fans are just so awesome. All right, we are two games into this best of seven series. So in case you missed anything, we're just going to do a brief recap of games one and game two for this OKC team. The Thunder walked away with the win mm-hmm. in game one, a really solid effort by this group. They held Dallas to just 95 points. They put up 117 points on the other end of the floor. And that game was really highlighted and headlined by some great defensive energy, effort, and activity by the Thunder.
Yeah, the thing that really stood out to me was kind of a small part of the defense, but a very critical one against this Dallas team, which is some low man help side defense. So as we talked about earlier, the Mavs are going to try to run that pick and roll through the middle of the floor every single trip down. It just creates so much attention in the lane, and it allows for Doncic and Irving to get to their spots, mm-hmm. You know, attacking the rim or spraying out for threes. The Thunder did a really nice job of doing probably the most important thing on that play, which is taking away the lobs, taking away the over-the-top passes for wide-open dunks for Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively. A few times, Shea had a block on the weak side. Chet came over and helped in that double big lineup. And Gordon Hayward really bodied up Gafford at the rim and forced yeah. a miss down low as well. So game one, that pressure point on the defense on sort of that weak side block really was a strong point for the Thunder and helped them, you know, win that game.
Yeah, and the Thunder walk away with 22 points off of Dallas's 16 turnovers, mm-hmm. a really good indicator of how that defense fueled OKC's offense throughout the night. And another big theme from this night was the energy and the effort from the second unit, and right. particularly a guy named Aaron Wiggins, who came in the second quarter after not playing a single minute in the first quarter, came in the second quarter and had 12 points like that.
Immediately. I mean, I'm pretty sure that his first two touches of the ball were in his hand for less than half a second, puts up a three. In his hand for less than half a second, puts up a three. He had 6 points in the span of like 2 seconds of even touching the ball.
Yeah. And he finishes the night with 16 points, 3 of 4 from the 3-point line, 5 of 7 from the field. And it's not just Aaron. He obviously was the leading scorer off the bench for the Thunder, mm-hmm. but Jalen Williams, Jay Will, came in 11 points for him as well. Cason Wallace, who yeah. is an awesome defender and a great kind of, you know, backup for Lou Dort in those sort of moments. Also super decisive with the ball in his hands. And it was the decision-making, the quick decision-making and the confident decision-making on the offensive end from the second unit that I think really stood out to me in this game.
There's a speed and tempo to that offensive attack that's critical against this Mavs team. Mm-hmm. We saw Dallas against the Clippers. When they were able to slow LA down, right. it was really difficult for the Clippers to score. The Thunder, as we'll talk about a little bit in game two, they can't allow that to happen to them. If they mm-hmm. get bogged down and stagnant on offense, that's not going to be a good recipe in this series.
Yeah, so a really good start by the Thunder in game one of this series. I will also point out Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, 29, 9, and 9, just an incredibly well-rounded effort by just doing his thing out there. And then Chet Holmgren, 19-7. J-Dub finished with 18-5-5 as well in game one. Game two, as we talk about, every game takes on a new life of its own. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that in the regular season. Even more true during the playoffs, even when you're playing against the same opponent each and every night. And game two had a little bit of a different look to it. The Dallas Mavericks, after shooting 39% from the field in game one, 34% from the three-point line in game one, they shot 46% in game two and 49% from the three-point line in game two.
Yeah, PJ Washington was incredible on those catch-and-shoot threes, a lot of them from the corners and the wings. I think he had 7 threes in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr., who did not play well in game one, he came back and he made some massive shots in this game, got it going on a couple little like short jumpers and runners. And then, you know, he kind of had a backbreaker, beat the buzzer in the corner on a loose scramble play. And in the fourth quarter, that was really tough to overcome. Also had a 4-point play opportunity as well. So those are the types of things that as the Thunder digests this game, they're going to be talking about internally of like, okay, how much do we trust the shot making that Dallas put out there today
mm-hmm.
is going to be something that we need to seriously worry about moving forward? Or are we going to double down on some of the things that we really feel like are the core objectives that we've got to get done on the defensive end of the floor? All of that, those are not singular factors. All of those things kind of coalesce together into a decision-making strategy. But these are the elements that when you get into a series, you can't overreact one way and you can't underreact either. So you've got to find a way to just, you know, sort of sort out exactly what your priorities are. And that's something the Thunder has done well all season long, is prioritize.
And the good news for the Thunder in this game, they were in the game for majority of the game. The game never really got out of hand at any point. I think Dallas led by their biggest lead was 14 points mm-hmm. in this game. And that was towards the end of the game. But early on, the Thunder, just behind by maybe 10, 11, cut it to single digits, even took a 3-point lead in the third quarter. So their ability to just hang in there, give themselves a chance, a big, big key to this game. Because Coach Dagnall pointed out after the game, this wasn't a matter of having a lack of energy. It wasn't a lack of effort. It wasn't even a lack of physicality or anything like that. It was just a couple of stretches of looseness when it came to execution.
Yeah.
And that goes to show in the postseason how critical those stretches are and how much those stretches add up over a cumulative 48-minute game. Because it's not like Dallas was just on a heater all game long. It was 5-0 spurts, 7-0 spurts, 10-0 spurts. Peppered in throughout the entire game and down the stretch, the Thunder just couldn't exactly match that bucket for bucket. And that allowed Dallas to walk away with a win.
Yeah. And some of those little, you know, a loss of attention to detail mm-hmm. and loss of focus on certain plays, like that's going to happen in games that you win also, but minimizing the number of those things. And it's something, I mean, this is true to the identity of the Thunder all season long, is to recognize these are 48-minute games. Every possession matters. The Thunder is still learning some of these lessons for the first time in terms of these individual situations. What is really cool, I think, and I talked to Shea about this after the game, is like there's a bit of an embracing of like, hey, these are all new experiences for us.
Yeah.
This team's never lost a playoff game before. So there's almost some juice in like, let's attack this new problem together. All season long, they've solved the puzzles as five. They've solved mm-hmm. the puzzles as a group. They're going to get a chance to do one again here today.
Coach Dagnall said post-game, I'm curious to see how we respond, but I'm confident in how we'll respond based on the history of this team and how they've handled adversity all season long. And they'll have a chance to respond, but this time it's going to be in the American Airlines Center in downtown Dallas. Game three is going to be on Saturday. That game is at 2:30 p.m., a little bit of an afternoon tip-off that's going to be on ABC. And then we're going to get a game four in Dallas, 8:30 p.m., and then we are guaranteed a game five. That's back here in Paycom Center, and that's going to be at 8:30 p.m. on TNT.
Yeah, so no matter what happens down in Dallas in games three or four, be ready to come down to Paycom Center and get it rocking. I'm sure there'll be the festivities outside at Scissortail Park, which we can see right here from our beautiful studio.
Looking great.
And so, the Thunder's going to definitely need all the juice coming back home. Going to want to try to get this series back in terms of home court advantage down in Dallas. But if not, got to wrestle it back here in OKC.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And this has certainly been an entertaining series so far. Just a lot of fun things to keep our eyes on. And I expect nothing less going into the rest of these games as well. But until then, thank you so much for tuning in and watching. Be sure to like, rate, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much to our producer, Matt Bishop. And until next time, Thunder up and catch you later.